Today, how a month of terror attacks in France fueled a free speech debate and forced the president to defend one of his country's defining principles. Back in 2016, before he had announced he would run for president, Emmanuel Macron made a speech. "No religion is a problem in France today," he said. "We have a duty to let everybody practice their religion with dignity." Fast forward 4 years, and the president has used these words again, but this time to defend himself against accusations of Islamophobia.
"I want to say that, contrary to what I've heard a great deal during the last couple of days, our country is one which has no problem with any religion in the world because they can all be practiced here freely. And as far as French Muslims are concerned, and indeed all Muslim citizens throughout the world, I want to say to them that France is a country where this religion is practiced freely and where there is no stigmatization. Everything that I've heard is quite wrong."
His response to terror attacks in France last month have led to protests throughout the Muslim world after he defended the publication of caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad and his calls to root out radical Islamism in a country where hundreds have died in terror attacks in recent years have been criticised for unfairly targeting French Muslims. In recent days, Macron has called out Western media for their coverage of events, accusing them of fundamentally misunderstanding one of the key principles of French life, secularism, or laïcité. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, Emmanuel Macron and France's debate over freedom of expression. John Henley, you're The Guardian's Europe correspondent based in Paris. And I think to understand this story, we need to go back to a brutal attack on a teacher several weeks ago. Tell me about the background to that event.
Samuel Paty was a history teacher in a small town called Conflans-Sainte-Honorine, which is about 20 miles northwest of Paris. He was 47. He was an experienced and a passionate and a genuinely very appreciated and popular teacher. Basically, if you had Mr. Paty, you were considered lucky. The school takes in pupils from kind of quite diverse backgrounds. There were quite a number of Muslim children in his classes. He'd taken a day course at the Arabic Institute in Paris to learn more about Islam. He'd set in motion a process to kind of invite staff from that institute to come and give a presentation at the school. As well as history and geography, he taught civics, which is part of the French lower secondary school program. And that includes a component on freedom of expression. Now, he taught this particular class several times before, and what he did was he showed a whole range of cartoons to his class, and they included two of the Prophet Muhammad. Both of them had been published previously by the satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo, which, of course, was the target of that horrific Islamist terrorist attack in 2015 that killed a dozen people. And the trial of the accomplices in that attack had started in Paris like a month before.
14 people are accused of helping three gunmen who carried out the assaults that killed 17 people. 11 were in court, 3 are being tried in absentia. Some could face life in jail.
Now, one of the caricatures that Samuel Paty showed his class showed Muhammad holding a sign saying, "Je suis Charlie," or "I am Charlie." That was a reference to the slogan that became very popular after the Charlie Hebdo attack in 2015. It wasn't particularly crude, except that, of course, for many Muslims, it's blasphemous simply to attempt to portray the Prophet. The other cartoon actually, though, was very crude. It showed Muhammad naked. He was on all fours, and there was a star coming out of his behind, and the caption was, "A star is born." Now, Paty was very well aware, as I say, he'd taught this class before. He knew that this would be difficult, especially for Muslim children in the class. So he asked every pupil in the class, not just Muslims, because that would have been illegal, but he asked every pupil in the class who thought that they might be offended by these drawings to close their eyes or to turn away if they wanted. And the point of the whole class, of course, was to allow the kids in the class to discuss the rights and the freedoms that are enshrined in the French Republic and its overriding principle of universality and what's known in France as laïcité, a kind of a French version of secularism.
So Samuel Paty did ask the students to turn away if they wished, but how did parents at the school react to this?
Well, there was a pretty furious backlash from some Muslim parents. Several objected to what he'd done, and one of them actually filed a formal complaint to the police. This was a father of a girl in the class, and he posted a video on Facebook in which he called Paty a yob and voyou in French, who should simply no longer be allowed to teach children. It actually emerged later that this father's daughter, whose account of what happened in the class had prompted his complaint, hadn't actually been in the lesson. But anyway, the affair was picked up by a well-known Islamist militant in France, a man called Abdelhakim Sefhioui, who himself posted a video that denounced Paty's teaching as irresponsible and aggressive. And I mean, the claim basically was that Paty was Islamophobic. The head teacher backed him and called in inspectors to sort of back up her decision, inspectors from the local education authority. They also supported Paty, as did the police. And essentially, everyone involved said that his lesson had been entirely appropriate and correct, and he wasn't going to face any disciplinary proceedings.
Okay, what happened next?
What happened next was that on October the 16th, as he was walking home from school, Samuel Paty was viciously attacked. He was stabbed in the neck and the stomach, and then he was decapitated. The killer was an 18-year-old called Abdulak Anzarov. He was shot dead by police very soon afterwards when he fired at them and tried to stab them as they were closing in on him. Now, he lived in Evreux, which is about 60 miles away from Conflans. He'd never attended Paty's school, and he had a record for petty vandalism and fights as a youth, but he had no known radical or Islamist affiliations. He was born in Moscow of Chechen parents. He'd arrived in France when he was six. The whole family had been granted refugee status, and Anzarov himself had a residence permit valid until 2030. In an audio message in Russian that he posted straight after the killing, he said he had avenged the prophet whom Paty had portrayed, he said, in an insulting way. And he said that he hoped Allah would accept him as a martyr.
What you've described, John, is horrific. How did France react when this story broke?
France was absolutely horrified. There was a gathering outside the school itself on the evening of the attack. 2 days later, on the Sunday, there were rallies around the country. Every major French city, Paris, Lyon, Toulouse, I mean, literally dozens of rallies in support of free speech and secularism, this idea of laïcité, and in tribute to Paty.
They packed the Place de la République in Paris. Many in the crowd were teachers and frightened.
And there was a wave of shock in the Muslim community too. The rector of the Lyon mosque, Kamel Kabtan, who's a very senior Muslim figure in France, he said that Paty had just been doing his job, had been entirely respectful in doing so. And he said terrorists were not religious, but are trying to use religion to take power.
You've mentioned this word laïcité a couple of times. What is it and why is it important to this story?
Laïcité is essentially French secularism. Its roots go back even further than the French Revolution. So they are now a really ingrained part of France's political and social and cultural DNA. The concept was codified in a law in 1905 that definitively separated the church from the state in France after a long drawn out centuries old anti-clerical battle with the Catholic Church. And basically, laïcité protects the right to believe, but also the right not to believe. And it aims to completely banish religion from all public affairs of the state. Religion must become something to do with the private sphere. And it's very strict in this. So, for example, all conspicuous religious symbols, including the Muslim headscarf, but also including crucifixes, were banned from state schools in 2004. Equally, even now, there are annual battles over whether it's legal to display a nativity scene in a French town hall. The French are really deeply attached to this idea that the collective political community of the whole nation has to take precedence over individual communities, because it's that collective political community of the nation and the republic that is the only thing that can really guarantee freedom and equality. What's also really important and really plays into this whole Patti question and the Charlie Hebdo tragedy is that French law also gives you the right to mock any sacred belief. You can basically take the piss out of religion. But it's not legal to insult or incite hatred or discrimination against an individual on the basis of that religion. And in fact, France explicitly allows blasphemy. There's a law dating back to 1881, and that's what's protected the Charlie Hebdo caricatures.
So laïcité has been a part of French life for many years, but do many in France still support it?
There was a survey that was published in Marianne magazine that was carried out after the attack on Samuel Paty. They surveyed 2,000 people, and they also surveyed 500 French Muslims. And it found that 88% of respondents to that survey approve of the 1905 law on laïcité, and 87% of French Muslims also supported the 1905 law. 37% said they'd like some alterations, and the majority, actually 56%, said the law against headscarves in schools, they would like to be amended.
Right, so a very complicated context to that attack. Tell me what Macron did in the days after it happened.
On the night of the attack, the president went to the school in Conflans. He said that France's battle against Islamic terrorism was existential. He said that the attacker had sought to attack the Republic and its values, and he vowed that terrorists would not succeed.
One of our citizens was assassinated tonight because he was a teacher, because he taught students about the liberty of expression. The liberty to believe or not to believe.
In a sense, Paty became a kind of a martyr for the Republic. Teachers are essentially the kind of secular priests, if you like. They transmit the values of the Republic. And there was a genuinely moving ceremony in the main courtyard of the Sorbonne University, at which he was posthumously awarded the Légion d'honneur, France's highest honor.
Samuel Paty est devenu vendredi le visage de la République.
He defended laïcité, and he also said France would not give up cartoons.
Nous ne renoncerons pas aux caricatures.
Which is a remark that he later had to clarify, and he did in an interview with Al Jazeera, to make it clear that these cartoons didn't reflect the views of the French state in any way, but that the French state defended their right to be published. Besides the words, in the days after the murder of Samuel Paty, the government launched a clampdown on radical Islamist activity. It raided dozens of groups and individuals that it suspected of extremism and of spreading online hate and promoting Islamist fundamentalism. A mosque in Pontin, which is a suburb north of Paris, was closed down for 6 months.
Here, worshippers at a mosque that's been closed down by the Interior Minister, who claims its leaders shared an online video saying Samuel Paty should be intimidated.
From the moment someone relays a video, you should chase him, not the mosque, not a whole community.
And the government also said it was looking into expelling 231 foreign Islamist radicals, most of whom were already in prison.
Wow. How did the international community react to all of this?
There were protests in many Muslim-majority countries, particularly over the cartoons themselves, but also over what was perceived as Macron's defence of the cartoons. He, of course, has only ever really defended their right to be published, but he was very clearly identified, and the French state was clearly identified with those cartoons.
İnanç özgürlüğünden.
The Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan called for a complete boycott of French products in Turkey, and he said Macron should have his mental health tested.
Akli noktadan kontrol.
Iran, Jordan, Kuwait criticized the publication of the caricatures, as did the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. In Bangladesh, about 40,000 people took the streets in an anti-France rally and they burned an effigy of Macron. So there was a big backlash in the Muslim world. Yeah.
This was the second time in a month that Macron's words had provoked an angry response from some Muslim countries. On the 2nd of October, he made a speech in which he outlined a range of measures to combat what he describes as Islamist separatism, or who he sees as extremist French Muslims who hold an allegiance to the Quran and Sharia law over French laws and values. His measures include a ban on homeschooling, an end to foreign imams training French clerics, tighter controls on Muslim associations and prayer halls, and funding for mosques that sign up to a charter on secularism and democracy. He also rejected calls from the far right for a complete ban on headscarves for women in public. What was it within this speech that made people so angry?
Certainly some parts of the speech were clumsily worded.
But I just want to speak to you honestly and say things the way I see them.
Macron said at one point, for example, that Islam was a religion in crisis all over the world.
Islam is currently going through an existential crisis around the world. It's not just in France.
And it was attacked by some Muslim governments straight afterwards, and also by some Western Muslims in the States, for example, in the UK, some of whom called it outright racist. And others saw it as an attempt to create a kind of state-approved French Islam, which was nothing to do with the people who actually practiced it themselves. He also recognised explicitly that, and this was very important, he recognised explicitly in his speech that France had created a kind of social and economic separatism of its own by basically concentrating poorer people, many of them from the sort of immigrant Muslim North African backgrounds, into the famous French banlieue, these kind of high-rise, low-hope housing estates on the outskirts of many of France's major cities.
And we haven't been able to create a social ladder through which people can move up in life. And we, as a French Republic, we have failed these people.
To many people in France, the speech looked like a genuine attempt to develop a longer-term strategy that would effectively raise some kind of barrier between this minority of violent, really bloody extremists and the vast majority of the French Muslim population, while also recognizing that those Muslim communities in France are often really disadvantaged in terms of life opportunities and looking to do something to change that.
How big a problem is Islamist extremism in France?
Well, it's a really, really serious issue. There have now been more than 250 deaths to Islamist terror in France since 2012. Most of them were attacks that were carried out by people who were either born in France or had been resident in France for most of their lives.
On November 13th, 2015, members of Islamic State rampaged through Paris, attacking the Bataclan Music Theatre. More than 100 people were killed.
In France, they are mourning the worst peacetime attack since World War II.
In Nice, France, 84 people killed by a terrorist truck driver, French officials saying 10 of the dead, 10 of them were young children.
Counter-terrorist police have thwarted 32 attempted Islamist attacks in France over the past 3 years.
In that speech, as you mentioned, Macron also talked about social inequality and the separatism, as it were, there. What did he mean by that?
Well, the problem you see is that all of this stuff overlaps. What I mean by that is that French Muslims are obviously Muslims, but they're also, in inverted commas, immigrants, and they're also, in inverted commas, Arabs. And they suffer social, geographical, racial discriminations as a result of all of that. There was a survey last year that found that 42% of Muslims in France said they'd experienced discrimination at least once in their lives. 13% said they'd encountered it during police controls, 14% during an attempt to sort of rent or buy a flat. 28% of French students with at least one parent born in North Africa leaves school without a diploma, compared to 19% of those, both of whose parents were born in France. Repeated studies have shown that if you've basically got a Muslim Arab name, then you are many times less likely to be invited for a job interview. Obviously, there are success stories, but I think it's undeniable. In many ways, France has really failed its Muslim communities.
Nabila Ramdani, you're a French Algerian journalist and you grew up just outside Paris. Can you tell me a bit about the neighbourhood you spent your childhood in?
Well, without wishing to sound too dramatic, I certainly grew up in what I would call a post-war France. And by post-war, I'm not referring to the Second World War, but to the Algerian War of Independence.
This is Algeria, a nation of 10 million people, where after 7 years of bloodshed and strife, man's eternal desire to be free has been achieved.
Which only ended with victory for the Algerians in the early 60s.
The war is over. The peace has just begun. Peace and independence.
And that's very much in living memory, and the war's legacy can be perceived in all kinds of aspects of modern life. And certainly as children growing up in the Paris suburbs, we were very much viewed and indeed treated as an immigrant class who did not really belong, and all kinds of life chances that other children would take for granted were closed to us, and we were pretty much instructed that our futures lay on the estates. And I think a point that is easily overlooked by foreign observers is that the second most influential party at the moment was founded by far-right nationalists who wanted to keep Algeria French. This party, the National Front, which was openly racist, Islamophobic, and indeed anti-Semitic, is now called the Rassemblement National, and millions still vote for it. So there's still a vehemently mainstream racist class in France.
We talk about the Muslim community in France, but how big is it?
Well, Muslims in France are the biggest ethnic and religious minority in Western Europe. After Catholicism, Islam is the second biggest religion in France. It represents 5 to 6 million Muslims. The vast majority have come to France initially as immigrant labourers from France's former colonies and especially North African countries to rebuild France after the Second World War. And they were mainly living in shantytowns outside the big cities in France. Their descendants, who were born and raised in France, still continue to live on the margins of society, on housing estates. Various politicians have referred to these housing estates as ghettos, but also as part of France's segregationist policies, in the sense that there's a stark difference between well-to-do people who tend to thrive in city centres and people of ethnic and religious backgrounds who continue to live on the margins.
On the 2nd of October, Macron made this speech about Islamist separatism. What did you make of that?
I think Mr. Macron's speech on the 2nd of October was textbook Macron. He was effectively sugarcoating reactionary policies based on the premise that 5 to 6 million French Muslims cannot be trusted to manage their own affairs. And as an example of the stigmatization involved, Macron was saying that he wanted to limit homeschooling for Muslim children. So the overall message is that Muslims cannot be trusted in private spaces and they need constant monitoring. Money is offered as a way of sweetening the increased interference. For example, Muslim institutions will receive extra funding, but only in return for more control. And the details of the legislation haven't been worked out yet. But it is so obvious that they will include increased powers to the police and security services, and indeed neighbours who want to spy and report. And this is the very definition of totalitarianism.
Macron would argue that that speech is to tackle what he sees as a huge problem in France, which is a high number of people dying in terrorist attacks that have been caused by Islamist extremism. And in the speech, he did distinguish between what he describes as Islamist separatism, but also made it very clear to not denounce all Muslims in France. Do you think that he didn't achieve that in that statement?
Well, I think the absurd reality is that if you make a keynote speech about division, you are going to create even more division. And sadly, I think he has been influenced by far more reactionary colleagues. And of course, he has his eyes on millions of Rassemblement National votes for when he stands for re-election.
Macron defended Samuel Paty's right to show those Charlie Hebdo cartoons in the classroom. What do you make of them?
One has to be clear about, you know, the nature of these cartoons. They associate one of the most cherished and indeed sacred figures in Islam and all his followers with bombs and terrorism in general, stupidity and indeed pornography. Such malicious caricatures have nothing to do with free speech whatsoever and wouldn't be allowed in a country like Britain, just as portrayals of black people as slaves on a leash or indeed black politicians as monkeys eating bananas would not be allowed in Britain. And yet this is exactly the kind of obscene material that Charlie Hebdo publishes in France and is allowed to get away with. It effectively dresses up racism, blatant racism, as satire.
Is it really surprising that this is Macron's response, that he sees allowing these cartoons to be shown as a bastion of French culture, of laïcité, of free speech? I mean, in that speech back in the beginning of October, he talked about schools and said that they are so essential and that they are France's Republican crucible. He has to defend that teacher's right, does he not, to show these?
I think it's very important to emphasize that we can discuss the general problem of hateful images that spread collective guilt and humiliate often underprivileged minority communities beyond acts of barbaric terrorism. Free speech has its limits within the law. And I think that the secular republic, in fact, rightly respects religion. French law rightly protects religious and cultural minorities. The problem is that hateful cartoons that would normally be considered illegal are somehow being elevated to great symbols of modern France. This goes against the position of other world leaders who worry about anti-Muslim sentiment at a time when there's already, you know, increasing antipathy towards those communities. Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, she put it very well in her speech when she said that, you know, in relation to the cartoons specifically, freedom of expression has its limits and that we must oppose extreme speech. Justin Trudeau of Canada said as much. The UN emphasized that message as well. And I very much hope that this resonates in France.
Coming up, where does Emmanuel Macron go from here? John, the attack on Samuel Paty was not the last to happen in France. Less than a fortnight later, a 21-year-old Tunisian entered Europe through Italy before making his way to Nice's Notre Dame Basilica, where he carried out a horrific knife attack, killing three people, including a church cleric. Many have remarked that President Macron's comments in the wake of the attack marked a change in tone from his recent statements, with a greater emphasis on unity.
C'est également un message d'unité. En France, il n'y a qu'une communauté. C'est la communauté nationale.
Why do you think he might have changed his approach?
I think the combination of the Nice attack and the sheer volume of criticism that came in at France, I mean, not just from these sort of street protests and boycotts in the Muslim world, but also parts of what you might call the liberal international press criticizing laïcité and criticizing Macron's defense, for example, of the right to publish these caricatures, in many ways portraying laïcité as religious intolerance. There is a sense in France, I might have heard French people say this, that the way the French approach is portrayed abroad is almost as if laïcité and blasphemy laws and all that kind of thing is actually, in a way, almost more extreme than the beheading of a schoolteacher, which a lot of people in France find extremely hurtful. And I think Macron went out of his way after that volley of criticism and those protests to really try and make the French position clear.
Okay, so there's clearly international pressure which is informing Macron's response to this situation. But what about domestically?
An obvious context of this is that he faces re-election. The far right and the centre-right parties in France, Marine Le Pen's National Rally and Les Républicains, they've both talked in far more violent terms, in fact, about declaring war on Islamism and eradicating it and bringing an end to mass uncontrolled immigration. And they've essentially accused Macron of naivety and said that the things that he's proposing really won't be enough. On the other hand, the far left have accused him of stigmatizing Muslims. And the centre-left said that he had successfully avoided stigmatizing Muslims, but they regretted the fact that he hadn't produced enough on targeted economic and social policies for those deprived and disadvantaged Muslim communities. What's worth pointing out is that he is far more moderate on this than some of his ministers, and that might be a more pressing problem, really, particularly his interior minister, Gérald Darmanin, who's very much on the right wing of Macron's party, La République En Marche. And he really has been guilty, I think, of weaponizing laïcité for political ends. So he's talked about France being in a civil war and made the ridiculous remark that he was shocked by separate halal and kosher food aisles in supermarkets. You know, and that obviously amounts to stigmatization. That's clearly unhelpful.
This is a very live debate in France at the moment, John. Where does Emmanuel Macron go from here?
There's several answers to that. I mean, I think politically, all the polls show that he's neck and neck or kind of just marginally ahead of Le Pen in the first round of the presidential elections. And every poll so far for the second round has shown him winning quite convincingly by between 10 and 15 points, less convincingly than in 2017, but relatively comfortably. In terms of this question of what France does about Islamist terror, he's sort of necessarily playing a long game. And Macron's job ultimately is to kind of somehow separate these violent extremists who do exist and have committed bloodshed on a horrendous scale in France from the vast majority of peaceable, law-abiding French Muslims. And, you know, you can sort of debate the rights and the wrongs of all this forever, but it is a fact that this principle of laïcité runs very, very deep in France indeed. And even if it is abused, which it is, I mean, I think you have to clearly acknowledge that it is sometimes weaponized and abused. You know, the overwhelming majority of French people, including the overwhelming majority of French Muslims, if you believe the opinion polls, support this fundamental principle. And that is the context within which Macron has to act.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was John Henley. Read more of his work at theguardian.com, including his coverage of the coronavirus pandemic in Europe. And it's been another week of positive developments in the hunt for a vaccine against COVID-19. Moderna announced its vaccine has a 95% efficacy rate, while Pfizer and the Oxford vaccine trial revealed their vaccines appear to work well for over 65s. You can find more coverage of this and also how the UK is preparing for a mass vaccination programme at the website. And next week, we'll bring you a Today in Focus episode about what this all means and whether we can allow ourselves to get excited just yet. That's all for today. Thank you to John and Nabila Ramdani. Today's episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. I hope you all have a brilliant weekend and we'll be back on Monday.